I want us to talk for a few minutes tonight about the dangers of deception. But I want to do that in a little bit different way from normal. Usually what we would do in a lesson about a topic like this would be to spend some time looking at various scriptures and describing deceit, how we should avoid deceit and why. And just so you know that God really does deem deception a sin, and just to show you that I have done my work on this topic, I'll give you a few passages to begin with. First of all, in 1 Peter 2 and verse 1, it says, "Therefore, laying aside all malice, all deceit, hypocrisy, envy, and evil speaking." Here we have a list of things that all have an evil motive behind them, and deceit is right there in that list of things we should lay aside. In 1 Peter 3 and verse 10, "For he who would love life and see good days, let him refrain his tongue from evil and his lips from speaking deceit." You recognize that Hebrewism that says refraining his tongue from evil and then the equivalent statement, his lips from speaking deceit. Deceit is an evil thing in God's eyes. It appears in a list of what defile us in Mark chapter 7 and verse 22. It appears in the list of the debased mind in Romans 1 and verse 29. And the psalmist says, this is David, "He who works deceit shall not dwell within my house. He who tells lies shall not continue in my presence." But what I really want to do tonight is not look through all the passages that describe deceit. What I would like to do is to see this in real terms in the lives of real people. And so we find ourselves here in Genesis 20 because this is the beginning of a story of one of the great heroes of the Bible. And I want you to see how his life was marred by deceit. And it didn't really begin in his life. It began in the life of his grandfather. And so we start here in describing the life of Abraham in Genesis chapter 20 and verse 1. Genesis 20 and verse 1. It says, "And Abraham journeyed from there to the south and dwelt between Kadesh and Shur and stayed in Gerar. Now Abraham said of Sarah his wife, 'She is my sister.' And Abimelech, king of Gerar, sent and took Sarah. But God came to Abimelech in a dream by night and said to him, 'Indeed, you are a dead man because of the woman whom you have taken, for she is a man's wife.' But Abimelech had not come near to her, and he said, 'Lord, will you slay a righteous nation also? Did he not say to me, "She is my sister"? And she, even she herself, said, "He is my brother. In the integrity of my heart and innocence of my hands, I have done this." And God said to him in a dream, "Yes, I know that you did this in the integrity of your heart, for I also withheld you from sinning against me. Therefore, I did not let you touch her. Now therefore restore the man's wife, for he is a prophet, and he will pray for you, and you shall live. But if you do not restore her, know that you shall surely die, you and all who are yours." So Abimelech rose early in the morning, called all the servants, and told all these things in their hearing, and the men were very much afraid. And Abimelech called Abraham and said to him, "What have you done to us? How have I offended you that you have brought on me and on my kingdom a great sin? You have done deeds to me that ought not to be done." Then Abimelech said to Abraham, "What did you have in view that you have done this thing?" And Abraham said, "Because I thought, surely the fear of God is not in this place, and they will kill me on account of my wife. But indeed, she is truly my sister. She is the daughter of my father, but not the daughter of my mother. And she became my wife. And it came to pass when God caused me to wander from my father's house that I said to her, 'This is your kindness that you should do for me. In every place wherever we go, say of me, "He is my brother."'" So Abraham brings Sarah to this land and he tells the people, he tells the king, "She is my sister." And Abraham is going to kind of pat himself on the back because technically that was true in a way, that she was a sister to him in a sense. And I want you to know this is not the first time Abraham has done this. If you look back in chapter 12, we're not going to do that this evening, but if you look back in chapter 12, he also did this when he went down to Egypt. Abraham deceived King Abimelech. Now we learn a few important things about deception in this text. First of all, we learn that deception is different from lying outright. Because in deception, we're not necessarily saying things that aren't true, but we're trying to create a perception that is wrong. You see, Abraham really did believe Sarah was his sister. She really was. That wasn't a lie, but that wasn't the most important thing he could have said about her. He could have said many things about her, but the most important was, "She is my wife." That's the real relationship that would have given the truth to these people. So deception is something that's not necessarily an outright lie, but it's something that gives the impression of something false. Webster defines the word deceive as to make a person believe what is not true, to delude, to mislead. And I want you to see, it's very clear that Abraham's actions were intended to mislead Abimelech. He wanted him to think this woman was not his wife. That's why it's deception. But we also learn from this text that because deception is not outright lie, sometimes we feel better about deceiving than we do about lying. That's the way Abraham felt. Look down in verse 11 here. He says, Abraham said, "Because I thought, surely the fear of God is not in this place, and they will kill me on account of my wife. But indeed, she is truly my sister. She is the daughter of my father, but not the daughter of my mother. And she became my wife." So, Abraham has some justification, doesn't it? And I want to say this at the outset of our lesson. There is always a reason or a justification to deceive people. There's always a motive. Abraham was worried about being killed. And so he found this little loophole through which he deceived the king. Did that make that okay? I think the text shows it didn't. If you look at verse 9 here, Abimelech said, verse 9. Abimelech called Abraham and said to him, "What have you done to us? How have I offended you that you have brought on me and on my kingdom a great sin? You have done deeds to me that ought not be done." Even a man who was not a true servant of God like Abimelech sees that something like deceit is wrong. I wish I could say this was all that happened. That Abraham deceived Abimelech and that was the end of this whole problem. But it seems Abraham passed that trait on to his son. Let's go to Genesis 26. Genesis 26 and verse 6. "So Isaac dwelt in Gerar, and the men of the place asked about his wife. And he said, 'She is my sister.' For he was afraid to say, 'She is my wife,' because he thought, 'Lest the men of the place kill me for Rebekah, because she is beautiful to behold.' Now it came to pass, when he had been there a long time, that Abimelech, king of the Philistines, looked through a window and saw, and there was Isaac showing endearment to Rebekah, his wife. Then Abimelech called Isaac and said, 'Quite obviously she is your wife, so how could you say she is my sister?' Isaac said to him, 'Because I said, lest I die on account of her.' And Abimelech said, 'What is this that you have done to us? One of the people might soon have lain with your wife, and you would have brought guilt on us.' So Abimelech charged all his people, saying, 'He who touches this man or his wife shall surely be put to death.'" So Isaac does the same thing for the same reason to the same person. This is the same king that dealt with his dad. And now he's dealing with Isaac. You see, what Abraham did has now jumped a generation. And now Isaac is guilty of the same thing for the same reason. He knew what happened. Abimelech knew what happened when you make a mistake about these people. He knew what had happened when he had made a mistake about Abraham and Sarah. And so he is furious with Isaac. "How could you tell me this? How could you deceive us in this way?" So, my question is it any wonder if Abraham did it, and then Isaac did it, is it any wonder that the next in the line is going to do it as well? Because the man I really want us to focus on tonight is Jacob. And Jacob is going to be square in the middle of this problem of deception. Look in Genesis 27. I'm not excusing Jacob's deceit, but it doesn't make it very surprising, does it, that Jacob is deceitful as well. Genesis 27 and verse 5. "Now Rebekah was listening when Isaac spoke to Esau his son. And Esau went to the field to hunt game and to bring it. So Rebekah spoke to Jacob her son, saying, 'Indeed, I heard your father speak to Esau your brother, saying, "Bring me game and make savory food for me that I may eat it and bless you in the presence of the Lord before my death. Now therefore, my son, obey my voice according to what I command you. Go now to the flock and bring from there two choice kids of the goats, and I will make savory food from them for your father such as he loves. Then you shall take it to your father that he may eat it and that he may bless you before his death.' And Jacob said to Rebekah his mother, 'Look, Esau my brother is a hairy man and I am a smooth-skinned man. Perhaps my father will feel me and I shall seem to be a deceiver to him. And I shall bring a curse on myself and not a blessing.' But his mother said to him, 'Let your curse be on me, my son. Only obey my voice and go get them for me.'" So Jacob is encouraged by his mother to deceive his dad and to deceive Esau as well. Now, how did that work? Now, there were a couple of times where Jacob just outright lied. He said, "I am Esau," to his dad. But really, the framing of this situation was such that Jacob was trying to deceive. That's why he went and killed a goat. That's why he put the goat skin on his arms and on his body, so that his dad would think he was someone he was not. That is deception. Let's pause here and make one point about deception. The way I want to do this is, as we go through these stories, I want us to just draw a few lessons. First lesson is, deception spreads. Did you notice it? From Abraham to Isaac to Jacob. I'll go ahead and reveal a little of the rest of the story. It's going to spread to Jacob's sons too. It's going to keep going because it's like a cancer. It continues to spread. If we see that other people are willing to play fast and loose with the truth, and that they have an advantage that comes from it, and that no one seems to do anything to them because of it, we are going to be tempted to do that too. Especially when we see that in the home, and we see our parents have no respect for truth, then we're going to have that same lack of respect for truth as well. How else do you explain such an epidemic of deception in an otherwise godly family? And I want to be clear, Abraham and Isaac and Jacob are great heroes of faith. The Bible paints them as such, but the Bible also shows us this flaw in their character. It shows us that there were times when they were pressured into doing things they would not otherwise have done. As I said earlier, there are always occasions where deception would help, where deception seems to bring us an advantage. But we need to remember the impact our deception has on other people. Because other people are watching us, and they're going to be influenced by how we treat the truth. Deception grows and spreads, not only in our lives, but in other lives as well. So when you're tempted to bend the truth, don't forget other people are watching you, and they will be influenced by what you do. If you are straightforward, they will be influenced to be straightforward. If you are deceptive, they'll feel they have license to be deceptive as well. And I'm not saying that justified it for Abraham or for Isaac or for Jacob or for his children. But I am saying it's not surprising when we see that trend continue because deception spreads. So Jacob's actions here, he deceives his father and it's going to upset his father and anger his brother. Look down further in chapter 27 here. Genesis 27 and verse 32. It says, "And his father Isaac said to him, 'Who are you?' So he said, 'I am your son, your firstborn Esau.' Then Isaac trembled exceedingly and said, 'Who? Where is the one who hunted game and brought it to me? I ate all of it before you came, and I have blessed him, and indeed he shall be blessed.' When Esau heard the words of his father, he cried with an exceedingly great and bitter cry and said to his father, 'Bless me also, O my father.' But he said, 'Your brother came with deceit and has taken away your blessing.' And Esau said, 'Is he not rightly named Jacob? For he has supplanted me these two times. He took away my birthright, and now look, he has taken away my blessing.' He said, 'Have you not reserved a blessing for me?' And Isaac answered and said to him, 'Indeed, I have made him your master, and all his brethren I have given him as servants. With grain and wine I have sustained him. What shall I do now for you, my son?' And Esau said to his father, 'Have you only one blessing, my father? Bless me also, my father.' And Esau lifted up his voice and wept." Isaac trembles exceedingly. He realizes he's been tricked. Esau is devastated and angry. He's so angry that he's going to kill his brother. If he has the chance, he says, "I swear, as soon as my father is dead, I'm going to kill him." Those are the fruits of deception. This is how it feels to be deceived. But it seems to me that Jacob is going to pay for this. This is not the end of the story. And Jacob, as he deceives here, is going to end up being deceived. We might say in a far worse way throughout his life. Let's turn to chapter 29 of Genesis now. Jacob has to flee from his brother because Esau was going to kill him, and he runs to Laban. To Laban. Look at what it says in Genesis 29 and verse 15. As he comes to Laban, it says, "Then Laban said to Jacob, 'Because you are my relative, should you therefore serve me for nothing? Tell me, what should your wages be?' Now Laban had two daughters. The name of the elder was Leah, and the name of the younger was Rachel. Leah's eyes were delicate, but Rachel was beautiful of form and appearance. Now Jacob loved Rachel, so he said, I will serve you 7 years for Rachel, your younger daughter. And Laban said, it is better that I give her to you than that I give her to another man. Stay with me. So Jacob served 7 years for Rachel, and they seemed only a few days to him because of the love he had for her. Now, let's take a time out there. Jacob and Laban have an agreement. In fact, he even says, I'll serve you 7 years for Rachel, your younger daughter, as if there might be some other Rachels wandering around that he might be confused with. They had a deal, and Laban says, okay, it's a deal. 7 years for Rachel. So that's what happens, right? Look down in verse 21. Then Jacob said to Laban, give me my wife, for my days are fulfilled that I may go into her. And Laban gathered together all the men of the place and made a feast. Now it came to pass in the evening that he took Leah, his daughter, and brought her to Jacob, and he went in to her. And Laban gave his maid Zilpah to his daughter Leah as a maid. So it came to pass in the morning that, behold, it was Leah. And he said to Laban, what is this you have done to me? Was it not for Rachel that I served you? Why then have you deceived me? And Laban said, it must not be done so in our country to give the younger before the firstborn. Fulfill her week, and we will give you this one also for the service with which you will serve me still another 7 years. Jacob uses the word we're talking about, doesn't he? Deceived. Why have you deceived me? Because that's what Laban had done. He had schemed and tricked, and he had given him Leah instead of Rachel. Now, Laban had a so-called reason, didn't he? He sure did. Verse 26, it must not be done so in our country. Now, that would have been information that was very valuable to Jacob 7 years earlier. Okay, 7 years before, tell me I can't give you Rachel right now. But see, Laban didn't want that. He wanted to deceive Jacob. He wanted more work out of Jacob. And so he deceived him. He had a reason, but it didn't justify what he did. So after Jacob had deceived his father and his brother, Jacob feels the sting of being deceived himself. I find that interesting. Jacob ends up working for Laban for 20 years. 20 years that are full of mistrust and scheming before deciding one night to sneak away with his family and flocks. And when Laban pursues Jacob, Jacob lets loose on him. I want you to see this in Genesis 31. Genesis 31. This is verse 36. Genesis 31, 36. Then Jacob was angry and rebuked Laban. And Jacob answered and said to Laban, what is my trespass? What is my sin that you have so hotly pursued me? Although you have searched all my things, what part of your household things have you found? Set it here before my brethren and your brethren, that they may judge between us both. These 20 years I have been with you. Your ewes and your female goats have not miscarried their young, and I have not eaten the rams of your flock. That which was torn by beasts I did not bring to you. I bore the loss of it. You required it from my hand, whether stolen by day or stolen by night. There I was. In the day the drought consumed me, and the frost by night, and my sleep departed from my eyes. Thus I have been in your house 20 years. I served you 14 years for your two daughters, and 6 years for your flock, and you have changed my wages 10 times. Unless the God of my father, the God of Abraham, and the fear of Isaac had been with me, surely now you would have sent me away empty-handed. God has seen my affliction and the labor of my hands and rebuked you last night. Jacob is furious with Laban because Laban has been dishonest with him. He has deceived him. He was dishonest about his wives. He was dishonest about the flock. Look at verse 7 of this chapter. It says, yet your father has deceived me and changed my wages 10 times. He is deceitful about his pay. Over and over again, at every turn, Laban has deceived Jacob. And do you know what he says? Verse 42. Unless the God of my father, the God of Abraham, and the fear of Isaac had been with me, surely now you would have sent me away empty-handed. If given the chance, he says, you would have cheated me again. You would have deceived me again. Let me pause and make a point here. Deception destroys trust. Jacob had no trust in Laban. I've got no faith in you at all. If you had the chance, you'd take advantage of me and you wouldn't miss a beat. Deception destroys trust. If someone tricks us, can we really be blamed if we don't trust them the next time? If the next time they say something to us, we take it with a grain of salt, as we say. Now, this isn't a question of forgiveness or making a mistake. It's important that we forgive and that we understand we all make mistakes. But those things are not the same as establishing trust. Trust is something that must be earned. Trust is something that is paid out in large installments over long periods of time. It is built up. It is not instantly given. And when trust is destroyed, it's destroyed. And it's very hard to rebuild. I've heard people bemoan the fact that others don't trust them. For example, I've seen these men who have cheated on their wives. And they're upset when a month or 2 months or 3 months after their affair, their wives still don't trust them. And they say, "Why doesn't she trust me?" As if it's the easiest thing in the world to be cheated on in that way and then to just trust someone completely the next day. You see, deception destroys trust. And we can't blame anyone if they don't trust us after we deceive them. That's the fruits of deceit. When we choose to be deceptive, what we are doing is forfeiting any hope of others trusting in us in the future. And we need to know that if we choose this course, that's what we're choosing. And that might seem like a light thing to you until you realize no one believes anything you say because of the way you have deceived them in the past. So Jacob returns from the land of Laban. He returns with his sons. But his sons have also learned, perhaps from their grandfather Laban, perhaps from their dad Jacob, perhaps from other influences in the family. They have learned to deceive as well. And so when a man rapes their sister Dinah, they're going to get back at them, not in a legitimate way, but through deceit. Look in Genesis 34. Genesis 34 and verse 13 says, "But the sons of Jacob answered Shechem and Hamor his father and spoke deceitfully." Surprised to see that word again, deceitfully, because he had defiled Dinah, their sister. "And they said to him, 'We cannot do this thing to give our sister to one who is uncircumcised, for that would be a reproach to us. But on this condition we will consent to you. If you will become as we are, if every male of you is circumcised, then we will give our daughters to you, and we will take your daughters to us, and we will dwell with you, and we will become one people. But if you will not heed us and be circumcised, then we will take our daughter and be gone.'" Be circumcised, they say, and we'll agree. That's our only condition. Be circumcised. Now, I don't know if this ever would have happened, but we're never going to find out, because before any of this comes to pass, they're going to murder these men. And so when these men are in pain from the circumcision, Jacob's sons kill them. Drop down to verse 30 of this chapter. Jacob tries to confront them about it. In verse 30 it says, "Then Jacob said to Simeon and Levi, 'You have troubled me by making me obnoxious among the inhabitants of the land, among the Canaanites and the Perizzites. And since I am few in number, they will gather themselves together against me and kill me. I shall be destroyed, my household and I.' But they said, 'Should he treat our sister like a harlot?'" Do you notice? They have an excuse. "We were defending our sister's honor." Did that make it okay to lie to these people? To trick them? To deceive them? No, it didn't make it okay. But there's always that justification to deceive someone. There's always a reason that we feel might justify it when in actuality it doesn't. But the last instance in this long line of deception, I hope you see it's just case after case after case. The last instance is perhaps the most telling and the most instructive for us. It's in Genesis 37. Genesis 37. I suspect you're familiar with this story. Joseph goes out to see his brothers, and his brothers capture him, and they throw him in a pit, and they ultimately sell him to Ishmaelite traders going down to Egypt. But now comes the question, what do we tell Dad? We've got to tell Dad something. Our brother is gone. He's going to ask about him. Joseph is his favorite. What are we going to tell Dad? so they decide, we're not going to tell Dad anything. Look in verse 31 of Genesis 37. It says, so they took Joseph's tunic, killed a kid of the goats, and dipped the tunic in the blood. Then they sent the tunic of many colors, and they brought it to their father and said, we have found this. Do you know whether it is your son's tunic or not? And he recognized and said, it is my son's tunic. A wild beast has devoured him. Without doubt, Joseph is torn to pieces. Notice, they don't lie to their dad. We don't have any record of them saying something that was wrong. They say, we have found this. Do you know if it's Joseph's? They let Jacob draw the conclusions. They let Jacob say, oh, a wild animal has done this. They let Jacob come to the conclusion that Joseph must be dead. But are they innocent in this because they didn't lie? No, they're the ones who took it and smeared it in goat's blood so that their dad would think this. You see, that's deceit. It's not outright lie, but it's trying to give a false impression to try to skew the facts so that someone will think something that is a lie. In verse 34, then Jacob tore his clothes, put sackcloth on his waist, and mourned his son for many days. And all his sons and all his daughters arose to comfort him, but he refused to be comforted. And he said, for I shall go down into the grave to my son in mourning. Thus his father wept for him. Jacob is devastated. He assumes his son has died. He mourns and weeps for him. And such a great man as Jacob is just broken by this event. You remember later on, they're going to want to take Benjamin down to Egypt. And he says, no, you cannot take him. I will die if you take him. If anything happens to this one too, I'm going to die. Amazingly, all his sons and all his daughters come to Jacob's tent. They try to comfort him. They try to console him. Not one of them, seeing him weeping, seeing him devastated, not one of them says, you know, Dad, he really is alive. You know, Dad, there's no reason for all these tears. Everything's all right. They keep up the lie even though they have devastated their father. Here we notice that deception hurts other people. Think back about what we talked about. The list of the victims of deception. Deception nearly cost Pharaoh and Abimelech their lives for touching the wives of Abraham and Isaac. Deception left Esau weeping over the blessing that had been stolen from him. Deception left Jacob devastated as he woke up the morning after his wedding with a woman he hadn't intended to marry. And in fact, that situation never really got better. Jacob and Leah always had this problem that Jacob really wanted someone else. And it became a problem that extended to Leah's children, who Jacob didn't love quite as much as Rachel's children. And that even led to Joseph being thrown in a pit and sold into Egypt. All the fruits of that first deception by Laban. Deception led to the deaths of Shechem and his brethren. And now deception leaves Jacob weeping and devastated. Now I understand that at times the truth hurts. But in no way does the collateral damage that truth causes compare to the damage that lies cause, that deception causes. In fact, many times the truth hurts because the lie is what we believed for so long. Deception hurts other people. And strangely, we sometimes think that if we lie or deceive someone, it's because we love them. We're going to spare their feelings. In reality, deception is what hurts them, and not the other way around. So Jacob's sons lie to their dad about Joseph. And for years, life just continues for them. It's just as normal as you can imagine. They go to work. They have children. They live their lives. Everything is fine. Joseph's nowhere to be seen. It looks like we got away with it, right? Until they start to get hungry. And they go down to Egypt to buy food. And ultimately, they find out their brother is alive. And more than alive, he has tremendous power in Egypt. And these young men have to crawl back home. I'm sorry, I say young men. They're grown men. These men crawl back home to tell their dad that their brother is still alive. Look in Genesis 45 with me. Genesis 45 and verse 25. Genesis 45, 25. Then they went up out of Egypt and came to the land of Canaan to Jacob their father. And they told him, saying, Joseph is still alive, and he is governor over all the land of Egypt. And Jacob's heart stood still, because he did not believe him. But when they told him all the words which Joseph had said to them, and when he saw the carts which Joseph had sent to carry him, the spirit of Jacob their father revived. And Israel said, it is enough. Joseph my son is still alive. I will go and see him before I die. They have to tell their dad about Joseph. And I don't know if they told him here, or if Joseph told them later, or if they told him along the way. But somehow or another, Jacob found out that they had lied to him, that they had deceived him. Jacob found out what they had done. Because in chapter 50, he's going to tell Joseph, you don't hurt your brothers. They did evil to you, but you forgive them. But imagine that. The lie you've covered up for so long, the deception that you perpetrated so long ago, now comes back to haunt you in a tremendous way. And your dad knows everything you did. This reminds us that deception will be uncovered. We might think we've deceived everybody and gotten away with it, but common sense and the Bible record show us we're not going to get away with it. Of all these instances, which one of these people got away with their deception? Did everyone just always believe that Sarah was Abraham's sister? Rebekah and Isaac, did nobody ever find out about them? Did Esau never find out that Jacob had tricked his dad? Did Jacob just think Leah was Rachel all his life? All of these deceptions were found out, were uncovered. And deception almost always will be uncovered in this life. And if it's not in this life, then it will be in the next. We might think our plan is so brilliant that we are just so clever, no one could ever figure out what we have done or what we have said. We think we're different from other people. We think our situation justifies it. We think it's a small, unimportant thing. It won't hurt anybody. No one will ever know. But deception will be uncovered. In Numbers 32 and verse 23, but if you do not do so, then take note, you have sinned against the Lord, and be sure your sin will find you out. Friends, brethren, your sin will find you out. There is no hiding sin. There is no hiding sin usually from others, but there is no hiding sin from the Lord God. What I want to show you about deception is that this is a road we want to avoid. In Proverbs 20 and verse 17, bread gained by deceit is sweet to a man, but afterward his mouth will be filled with gravel. There might be some short-term gain to deceit, but the point of this proverb is it isn't worth it. The point of this proverb is choose better. We don't want to eat the fruit of deception in this life or in eternity. So I urge you, let us be committed to truth at all costs. Let us be certain we don't think that just because we haven't uttered lies that we have been faithful to the truth. Let's be careful not to deceive and to choose the better way. Might be someone here tonight who needs to obey the gospel of Jesus Christ. Perhaps you have lived in a way like this, where you have deceived others and been deceived. And we urge you to come out of that, to come into the light of the gospel, to give up that fight of trying to hide who you are and what you do, and to come to Christ.
to let Him show you what is right, to turn away from sin and to live in His righteousness, to give up that life and to live for Him. If you need to confess your faith in Christ and be buried with Him in baptism tonight, we hope that you'll do that tonight. If there's some way we can help you, please come to the front as we stand and sing to encourage you.